it's great to see so many good prison officers all in a room together. I wish you were all in Norwich when I did my PhD research on what makes a good prison officer. Whenever I told anybody that's what I was researching, I was met with questions such as, well, or comments, let me know when you find one. So it's great that you're all here. I knew there was loads of you, and there's a lot more out there as well. When we were just mentioning about the prison officer training course earlier, I've been practicing this talk, and I think that's a little bit like the prison officer training course. Nothing actually really prepares you for the reality, does it? So by way of introduction, I've been working in or done research in prison for over 20 years. I've worked here at the Institute of Criminology for a number of years on several research projects, but I left a few years ago and I now work as a lecturer in criminology at the University of Suffolk. To start, I want to take you back to your beginnings. But before I do that, I'd just like to take you back to the beginnings of my research on prison officers. I was doing some research on the quality of prison life. It's the afternoon association period. I'm standing on a landing with a prison officer. There's a few prisoners milling around, cleaning the landing, playing pool and chatting. The atmosphere is relaxed and it's fairly quiet. A female prison officer comes up to me and she asks if I'd want a cup of tea, a very welcome cup of tea. In order to be able to talk to me and to be able to continue her observation of the landing, she pulls up two chairs. So we're sat right at the end of the landing. We've got full view of what's going on. During the course of the conversation, she turns to me and asks me if I want to be a prison officer. I know that the answer is no, or more accurately, no way, no offence. But I didn't want to upset her. So I thought carefully for a while and came up with an honest answer. I didn't think I was the right kind of person for the job. I didn't think I had what it took. I was worried that I would be too soft. I'd be worried that I'd get too involved in trying to help prisoners. I was worried that I'd be too emotional. I just didn't think I was tough enough or confident enough. The officer responded kindly. She said there's no reason that I couldn't be an officer, that it took all kinds of people. So this interaction sparked a barrage of questions for me. What does make a good prison officer? What does it even mean to be a prison officer? What are the effects of working as a prison officer? How do you cope with the demands of the job? How does the initial training course prepare people or not for doing the job? And how important are things like empathy, resilience, and emotional intelligence? I wanted to find out. We finished our cup of tea. Fast forward a couple of years, I'm standing in a corridor looking at a gallery of photographs when I hear a shout, "Get your hands out your pockets, officer." It took me a while to realise that somebody was talking to me. I was told it was unacceptable to stand with your hands in your pockets for security and safety reasons. It was my first day at the Prison Service Training College. I'm still not quite sure how my research took me there, but there I was, in a uniform, about to learn how to become a prison officer. What on earth had I let myself in for? I was there to do everything a new officer had to do. I had to get to grips with learning to use a radio, filling in forms, writing reports, and literally to get to grips with arm locks, leg locks, head locks, and controlled pain. I could also enjoy a late and cheap bar and several room parties, but that's another story. In terms of your own experience then, what did you think that when you first applied to become a prison officer? What did you think you had to be like? Were you worried that you would be too soft? What do you remember most about your training? What did the course focus on? And how did it compare to what you were expecting? For me, the training seemed to be all about security and an awful lot of CNR. Whilst there was a nod in the right direction towards helping prisoners and treating them with respect and decency, it was the security aspects of the job that were emphasised above all else. It surprised me that what were missing were formal training modules about interpersonal skills and about providing care and support to prisoners. And there was a lack of any real meaningful discussion about the part that officers can play in rehabilitation. Having and building relationships with prisoners was very much couched in aims to do with maintaining order, discipline and control. Training was very procedural and very practical. Initial training, though, is where the process of becoming a prison officer starts, where values and beliefs and not just procedures about the role of an officer and the nature of the job and about prisoners are instilled. It's where you begin to learn not just the practicalities of running a regime, but what it means to be an officer and how complex this can be. The focus on security meant that it was easy to come away thinking that prisoners were manipulative, controlling, and dangerous rather than people who might need help. It was easy to think of the job as being about locks, bolts and bars and standing up for yourself and about making a difference to people's lives. However, what I also found was, despite this emphasis on security, new prison officers expressed a specific desire to work with and help people. So, as well as being motivated to apply for the job for pragmatic reasons, such as the pay, the pension, the shift patterns, and things that, like the location of the prison, the job also captured a specific interest for many in working with offenders. So, from the outset, new officers seek a lot more from the job than being just a turnkey or a warden. What appeals is the variety of work and the personal challenge of working with a difficult group of people. So many new officers are motivated by what I call self-other actualisation. This is about the potential for an officer's own personal growth and development, but also the opportunity to influence the personal growth and development of others, i.e. the prisoners. So there's very often an aspiration, however small or hidden, to help people and make a difference. And this is what gives officers a sense of meaning and purpose. So new officers start with all these grand ideas about helping and rehabilitating prisoners. More for them, hey? Well, not necessarily. I did find that as officers acclimatised to the demands and the realities of the job, much of the initial optimism gets somewhat lost and buried under a growing mound of cynicism and disillusionment about the ability of imprisonment to rehabilitate and officers' own ability to influence it. High reoffending rates and various statistics can be quoted to demonstrate that prison just doesn't work, right? Plus, how on earth are you going to find time to help individual prisoners along with everything else that you've got to do? But what I found was that good prison officers find a way to maintain their initial motivation and build a sense of meaning and purpose. They engage in a process or a cycle whereby they reflect on, define and redefine their sense of meaning at various points through their career. They ask themselves or remind themselves, what is it they feel they're there to do, what is it they want to achieve, and what is it that gives them job satisfaction. This process involves, if you like, a kind of scaling down, but not an outright rejection of their initial grand ambition of being able to prevent people coming back to prison. What happens is that good officers reconstruct what it means to make a difference and form a less global definition of rehabilitation that helps them sustain a feeling of professionalism and purpose. So the notion of making a difference doesn't necessarily mean reducing offending. It can mean recognising the potential to influence a prisoner's behaviour, attitude or future prospects in more subtle, indirect and informal ways by making efforts to address some of the immediate problems that they face. So it can be just providing practical help, allowing a phone call to put a prisoner's mind at ease, organising a family visit for a prisoner who hasn't seen his children for a long time. It can be just by listening or offering direction, or it could be by giving educational assistance, so helping a prisoner who finds it difficult to read or write. I'm going to read out a quote from an officer that I interviewed. When I asked him to give me an example of when he felt the job was all worthwhile, he described how a prisoner came up to him, proudly showing off the first book he'd ever read. He says, "I collected this bloke's silver food tray one day, and he said, 'Look at this,' and he showed me a children's book, only 25 pages, and he said, 'I read that, I've read that. Nothing else happened, you know, but this sentence, I've learned to read that book. I was fucking choked. I still get choked about that.'" This quote encapsulates what it can mean for an officer to feel he's made a difference. These kinds of small, modest and achievable ways help to contribute to a prisoner's personal development. And these are the kinds of things that officers say gives them a sense of meaning and value, and the kinds of things that they say they find enriching and rewarding. What I've also found from my research is that a strong sense of self-identity and a firm idea of what your role is can help create and maintain a sense of purpose and meaning for officers. So good officers are aware of their own strengths and weaknesses. They carve a role for themselves that's consistent with who they are and what they believe in. I've asked many officers and prisoners what it takes to be a good prison officer, and one of the key pieces of advice, and this was something that was brought up earlier, is do not try to be somebody you're not. Both officers and prisoners are adamant that you have to be yourself in order to do the job. You can't pretend to be something you aren't, and you can't copy the way another officer works if it doesn't fit with who you are. You have to be as true to yourself as possible. You have to be authentic. Otherwise, as was said earlier as well, I think that person could have written my talk. Otherwise, prisoners will see right through you and you'll lose credibility and integrity. I did write this before he said all these things. Many staff and prisoners believe that it takes a certain kind of personality to do the job. But perhaps what that means, rather there being one type of personality that fits the job or a kind of one size fits all, what's important is being able to mould the personality you do have to the type of job that you want to do. What helps is having a definable orientation or working personality, if you like. So a way of working that's based on your core beliefs and values about what the job is about and what's important to you. For example, some officers might have a natural tendency towards a more counselling role, characterised by care and compassion. Others might gravitate to a more facilitator role, where they're more concerned with delivering the regime and administration. Others may be what are called practical empathisers. So they keep an emotional distance, but they can empathise or sympathise with the prisoner situation and alleviate their pains and problems by offering solutions. So these guiding orientations allow officers to wear a number of different hats, which you have to do on a daily basis, but also provide a certain amount of consistency. So it provides a kind of framework for what actions to take, how to behave, what kind of decisions to make. It provides a sense of direction and control so that officers can feel that you have the ability to influence what goes on. For those of you who have watched Porridge, thought earlier as well, key themes here seem to be tea and porridge. Think of the very different but consistent styles of working of the two officers of Barraclough and Mackay. So one having a soft, more rehabilitation-oriented approach and one having a hard, more punishment orientation. Think about how they go about their jobs and how that reflects their personality and their notion of what's important. So purpose and meaning can depend on what you believe you're there to do. It's not that security is unimportant, far from it. But whenever I ask officers what their role is, there's a huge consistency in saying that it is security that's the primary responsibility. Security underpins and facilitates everything else that officers may do. So if you like, think of the tasks of an officer as a pyramid, and at the base is security. And then as you go higher up the pyramid, the more kind of humanistic and relational aspects of the job follow. Security includes providing a safe environment for staff and for prisoners. So this is where officers talk about a duty of care as a responsibility to keep prisoners alive and protect them from coming to harm, either from themselves or from other prisoners. So it's in this way that officers feel that they look after and care for prisoners, but not about them. So the logic is quite simple. If prisoners are not there or not alive, then there's nothing else that you can do with them. But for officers, a lot of other things are important too. But the idea is that without security there, these other things that you want to do are contingent upon having a secure and safe environment. So the higher up the pyramid you go, the more the layers of the job go beyond maintaining security. At the very top of the pyramid, there may be a layer, you could call it rehabilitation, but it's not about that per se. It seems to be about relationships though. The higher up the pyramid you go, the more meaning and purpose officers derive from the job, the more they can achieve this self-other actualisation. But during times of uncertainty and when there's a lack of clarity in their job, security becomes the greatest focus and levels of meaning and purpose can drop. So when officers are unclear about what's expected of them or there's a lack of clarity, there's a tendency to revert back to the basics or the bread and butter of the job, security. Metaphorically and literally, when officers experience role ambiguity, they fall back on a kind of mops in buckets approach to their work, where the job is stripped down to the bare bones or the fundamentals of just getting the right mop in the right bucket and neglecting the more relational aspects of their work. The default goal is clear and short term, getting to the end of the day without any major incidents, without any escapes, without anybody coming to any harm. Whilst these goals are clearly not unreasonable, and whilst the focus on security provides a kind of sanctuary, so there's a sense of security in security, what it does seem to do is subvert a more rehabilitative orientation. So I'd like to suggest the following. A strong sense of meaning and purpose and of self and identity forms a bedrock for officers, providing the confidence to deal with the different situations they face and a means of navigation through the often choppy waters of a prison officer's day. Being a prison officer is a job, but for many it's more than just a job. It's a job that is extraordinary rather than ordinary by its very nature. It's a job that's laden with morals and values about justice, about punishment, about prison, about what should be done with offenders. The effectiveness of a prison is not just about reconviction rates, but also the values and morals that staff have and enact on a daily basis. What officers see as their purpose, how they conceive of and translate their role, shapes the quality of life, not just for prisoners, but for officers too. My research has found that many officers, whilst mindful of the dangers of over-involvement or becoming too immersed in their role, still invest an awful lot of themselves in their job, whether intentionally or not. For those officers who manage to find and maintain a strong sense of meaning and purpose, it's definitely more than just bread and butter and mops in buckets. I'd just like to end with another story. On one occasion during training, I was responsible for unlocking a landing. Once the command to unlock came from the centre office, off I went from cell to cell, unlocking the doors and shooting the bolt as I'd been taught. We'd been told to respect the privacy of the long-term prisoners there, so not to open the door very far. So off I go down the landing, unlocking cell by cell, trying to do this as speedily and as efficiently as possible, like everybody else was doing. I come to one cell and I struggle. I can't shoot the bolt. I try to look like I know what I'm doing. I try to remain calm and composed. I'm not sure it really worked. What felt like hours later, I managed to get the door in its correct state. The prisoner had been waiting patiently behind the cell door, but once he was free to emerge onto the landing, he couldn't resist taunting me with, "Well, you fucked that one up, didn't you?" I was mortified and self-conscious, and I shuffled along the rest of the landing to the next cell, convinced that I would never get the hang of being this prison officer malarkey. But instead of focusing on security and doing it the way everybody else was doing it, I could have engaged with that prisoner. I could have made that a brief comment. By doing so, I would have let part of who I am shine through into the job to help me gain a sense of purpose about what I was there to do. And I missed that opportunity. I haven't had to get the hang of being a prison officer, but you guys have, or are trying to, and I hope that these 2 days will do something to help you. I still have lots of questions I want to find the answers to, and I'm hoping you can help me with these. How does motivation and meaning change over time? What guiding orientations do officers have, and why? And where do officers find their sense of meaning and purpose, and what sustains it? So I'll be asking you to tackle these questions in the group discussions that we're about to have. Thanks for listening.